Welcome to the UFC 301 immediate reaction show. The card is mere minutes away from kicking off, and I appreciate everybody that's been following this show since its inception earlier this year. If you are new to the show, just know that this is one of those spots where I record my immediate reaction to every single fight as it concludes, and then I'll stitch all those videos together and drop it as soon as the card finishes so that we can digest every single fight as it went down, as well as giving you guys the odds that hit for every single matchup so you guys can see which spots we should have been targeting before the fight card had originally kicked off. And then we'll see if there's any call outs or anything that we can put together in terms of who these winners and losers should fight following this matchup. All right, we got 13 fights to talk about. Kevin Borjas is taking on Alessandro Costa to kick off the card. Let's see how this flyweight fight goes down. Alessandro Costa kicks off the card with a TKO over Kevin Borjas in the second round. It was a competitive first round, although Costa did manage to land some big shots on Borjas that probably gave him that round. But in the second round, Costa started to commit to some calf kicks, and it got an immediate reaction from Borjas, and that ultimately allowed Costa to get him to the ground, smash him from that top position, and eventually get that TKO victory. There was a ton of line movement on Kevin Borjas this week, myself included, as I thought Borjas would have a little bit more success in the striking realm, but Costa came in motivated and very prepared for this matchup, and he was able to pull off the victory there. And if people were confident and patient enough, they would have gotten a great line on Costa closer to the ending of fight week compared to the beginning, where he was a bigger favorite here. So good win for Costa. Let's talk about the post-fight interview after we talk about the odds that cash here. So Costa closes as the minus 120 favorite, comes through, cashes that ticket by knockout, plus 500, round two, plus 750, round two knockout, plus 1500, and the under 2.5 cashing at minus 120. I think the spot throughout this matchup should have been the under 2.5 this entire time, so I'm bummed that I didn't take a shot on that and just ended up taking Borjas straight up here. But in terms of the post-fight interview here for Costa, obviously calling out Usyk, saying he only had 10 days to prepare for that matchup, and he looks forward to potentially rematching him down the road, especially considering how his main event will end up going here. He believes, obviously, Pantoja will defeat him, but we will see how that goes. But regardless, this was a great spot for Costa to get back to 500, now 2-2 in the UFC, and seeing if he can start parlaying this into a winning streak and start moving up those flyweight rankings. But tonight, Alessandro Costa goes out there and TKOs Kevin Borjas in the second round. Ismael Bonfim goes out there and has a tremendous performance against Vince Pichel, defeating him on the scorecard, sweeping him there, and winning by unanimous decision. It was a great performance for the Brazilian, who was successfully able to bounce back from that loss that he suffered at the hands of Benoit Saint Denis last year. And this was a spot for him to go out there and showcase that he's still capable of high level performances. And that was just a hiccup in his career, which was the Benoit Saint Denis loss. This guy's still very good. And I think that people might be overdoing the fact that, you know, he's gotten so much better in the year off, but like, he showcased a similar performance on the Contender Series, which earned him his spot on the UFC roster, where he can go a full 15 minutes and showcase a solid striking approach. So I think that fact that, you know, he's been working hard over the last year to refine his game is just a little bit overblown at this point in time. He's always been this good. And I think just the stylistic matchup that he had against Benoit Saint Denis last time around compared to the matchup that he has here against Vince Pichel, two completely different clashes there, which is why we saw Bonfim successful in terms of getting off on his game and dictating the pace and setting the pace of that matchup. All right, let's check out the odds that cash here. Bonfim comes to us the chalk at minus 560, by decision plus 160, and then the over 2.5 cashes at minus 105. Good win for Bonfim to get back into the win column. I look forward to seeing how they match him up next, slowly moving him up the rankings and seeing if he can get himself into the top 10, the top 15, and how far he can take this thing. But great performance here as he wins the unanimous decision against Vince Pichel. Momentum was clearly on Ernesto Carrascate's side. However, it seemed to the judges that Deonny Barbosa did enough in the first two rounds to get her hand raised by unanimous decision. Now, I know there's going to be some uproar regarding this fight and the decision I'm probably already seeing it on Twitter anyway, but I saw some clear 29-28 Karaskete scorecards, and I think a lot of people believe that the control time that Ernesto was able to accrue at the ending of the second round was enough to sway that round in her favor. But if you watch back the rest of that round, or the beginning of that round, when they were in the striking realm, there were some spots that Barbosa seemed to land some big shots. Now, a couple of them were the spinning back elbows that she tried throwing, and even though they didn't really land clearly in terms of actually on the elbow, some of them were on the shoulder, some of them were on the tricep, one of them was even a little bit of a headbutt as well. It was the reaction that Karaskete was showcasing after those shots that made the judges probably believe that Barbosa landed harder than she actually did. And even when Karaskete was on top of Barbosa on the mat, she wasn't doing any big damage from that top position. She was, you know, fending off leg lock attempts or anything else that Barbosa was trying to do from that top position. So, you know, this is not a robbery. It was a close fight. Momentum clearly shifted to the Ernesta side around the 7-minute mark of this matchup, but you cannot overlook the optics of the beginning of the second round with the shots that Barbosa was landing. She was landing some big shots there, or at least optically making it seem like she was landing the bigger shots. And again, at the end of the day, damage is criteria number one, and that's where it seemed like she was landing a little bit more of. Again, Ernesto was kind of just riding out that top position when she had the last minute, minute and a half of control time, but I just don't believe that was enough to sway the judges back in her favor. So not a robbery, possibly could have gone either way. I thought that it was going to be Barbosa 2-1 once we hit the scorecards, but there was, you know, that second round was very, very, very close. Not a robbery in either sense of the word there. So yeah, I had a Barbosa 2-1. You could give it 2-1, Ernesta, is what it is. All right, let's check out the odds that cash here. Barbosa moneyline -250 comes through. By decision +130. And the over 2.5 cashes at -215. I saw a lot of people very heavy on the Deonny Barbosa side going into this matchup. And that was kind of my concern, is if this fight were to get into deeper waters, Karaskete has way more of a experience fighting deeper into fights, and Barbosa, you know, she really needs the grappling to get going, otherwise things could get shaky for her, and we saw firsthand here as well. So, you know, just a minor change in that second round could have given her a defeat in this matchup. So you got to be careful betting her at chalk moving forward. You got to ensure that she's going to be able to establish that top position or possibly getting an early finish. Otherwise, if she's fighting somebody with a better gas tank who can take her into deep waters, things could be different, especially if it's the same chalky price. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Barbosa gets the unanimous decision over Ernesto Karaskete at UFC 301. What a way to stamp your arrival to the UFC. Mauricio Huffy goes out there, or I should say Ruffy. I'm so used to the Brazilians and their R's and their H's. You know how it is. But let's get it right. It is Mauricio Ruffy going out there and knocking out Jamie Mullarkey at the ending of the first round. Beautiful work from Ruffy there, showcasing that he was in control pretty much the entire time, showing us a little bit of everything, the spinning stuff, the flying stuff, even an unorthodox trip to takedown attempt, but it didn't really seem to transpire into anything. But beautiful work in terms of just waiting for the opportunity to showcase itself, landing the big shot down the pipe, bloodying the nose of Jamie Mullarkey, and then just methodically picking him apart and putting him away. Absolutely beautiful performance there from Mauricio Ruffy. Now, I remember when he was coming onto the Contender Series, and I was running the tape on the guy, and I thought he was like the Walmart version of Conor McGregor, and he's, you know, showcasing that he has those that level of striking, and the fact that he can just dictate the range very well. Even when he's moving backward and his opponent is crashing the pocket, you see him cork that right down the pipe as a counter, even off of his back foot. He's able to land it with nasty intentions and shades of Mr. Notorious Conor McGregor. So maybe not the potential of being a gigantic star like Conor McGregor, but in terms of like fighting and imitating his style and his stance and the way he throws his strikes, is pretty much on point here from Mauricio Ruffy. So great performance for him there. You know, this was a tailor-made matchup for him in a sense, finding a guy that was very hittable in Jamie Mullarkey, a guy that's been finished 3 times, now 4 times in the past 2 years. great performance. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. It's always going to be a stylistic question in terms of who he fights next. We saw in the Contender Series, you know, he was less than 30 seconds away, a minute away from actually losing that matchup and not even being in the UFC. Luckily for him, his opponent gassed out and he was able to muster up a finish that night. But, you know, we got to pump our brakes on some of these guys that have spectacular UFC debuts and getting those highlight reel finishes. See how they're matched up moving forward and then decide whether we should continue to chase them or look to fade them and get a decent discount on their opponents. But regardless, great performance from Ruffy tonight. Let's check out the odds that cashed. Ruffy cashes as the favorite at minus 225. The knockout prop cashes at minus 110. Round one plus 230. Round one knockout plus 260. And the under 1.5 cashes at plus 120. Great work from Mauricio Ruffy. Looking forward to seeing how the UFC matches are moving forward. In the post-fight interview, he's already calling out Islam Makhachev, saying just to enjoy your time at the top. He's eventually coming. I don't know if he'll eventually reach it. There, it all depends on the path that the UFC gives him to the top here, but this is definitely a prospect to keep our eyes on. Mauricio Ruffy, first round knockout over Jamie Mullarkey. Jakar Close is coming back with a vengeance after that loss to Beneil Dariush, and now he's obviously on a solid winning streak. But tonight he picks up the unanimous decision victory over Joaquim Silva, and it was looking kind of bad for him late in that matchup, but he showed great poise, great veteran experience, and was able to stay live in that matchup to see the judges' scorecards there. I thought he won rounds one and two, obviously, and then the third round going to Silva, but it seemed like he was starting to slow down in that second round, utilizing, like I said, his veteran experience, knowing that he's slowing down. So he starts pushing Joaquim Silva up against the cage, getting some breath back into his lungs, but also winning the fight, optically speaking, by pushing him against the cage and landing some small damage there. I think it was John Anik that touched on it in the during the fight there, but Jakar Close is a guy that needs to be respected. 15-2-1 now. He's on a 4-fight winning streak. And again, that fight with Beneil Dariush could have gone his way. If you guys remember that, it was a back and forth slugfest that Dariush ended up getting the upper hand in to get that victory, but he had Dariush rocked very badly in that fight as well. And had he won that fight, we're talking about an 8-fight winning streak right now. Although, obviously, if he beats Dariush, he gets much tougher competition than fighting guys like Brandon Jenkins and Rafa Garcia. So, but still, the fact that he only has 2 losses throughout his MMA career, one coming to David Taymor, one coming to Beneil Dariush. I think in the UFC now, he has 9-2. I believe he's 36 years old now. He turned 36 back in March. You know, hopefully he can get back into contention there. We'll talk about his post-fight interview right after we go over the odds that cash here. Close, money line, minus 200 comes through. By decision, plus 200. And then the over 2.5 cashes at minus 105. Again, good work from Jakar Close there in terms of putting on a veteran-like experience. Now, in the post-fight interview, calls out Beneil Dariush and he calls out Jalen Turner, two guys that I think are more than deserving of fighting a guy like Jakar Close, and would be great for either of those guys if they were to get the finish or the win in any of those matchups. But I would love to see the Close and Dariush matchup. Dariush taking a couple tough losses as of late, especially by finish. He might want to sit on the shelf a little bit longer, but Jalen Turner would be a great matchup for a guy like Jakar Close as well. So, especially trying to bounce back after that unfortunate that UFC 300 performance that he had against Hanato Moicano. But yeah, good win for Jakar Close. I got to say, my attention has been all over the place during this matchup or during this card. You got Kendrick Lamar dropping another diss track to Drake. I think that's the third within the last 36 hours. So I'm trying to listen to that, take in all that beef and everything that's going on there. I'm a big hip-hop head as well. And then my Leafs currently in a game 7 against the Boston Bruins. They're about 10 minutes into the first period. It's still 0-0. So my attention is pretty much all over the place here, but obviously trying to keep the priority at the UFC. So yeah. Fingers crossed. By the time this card finishes, the Leafs game will be over and you guys will be able to either tell from my expression whether they won or lost, but I might update you guys throughout the podcast as well. I'm sure most of you guys don't care about hockey, but when you have the Leafs in a must-win game 7 scenario, trying to go into the second round, haven't won a Stanley Cup in 60 plus years, of course we're going to be watching intently and hoping that the best for them as well. So apologies, but not really apologies. It was one of the gutsier fights that we've seen in recent memory, but Miktabek Orhobai goes out there and wins a unanimous decision victory over Elvis Brenner, but still has me over here shaking my head that he was unable to get him out of there, considering how many times he had him hurt badly. From the first exchange up against the cage where he hurt him and transitioned into a takedown, I can give him the pass there because we knew that he wanted to get the takedown, so let's give him the pass there. But in the second round, he hurt him on numerous occasions, yet still decided to go out there and grapple instead of trying to put the stamp on that fight and get the finish. And then he gets that point taken away, I believe, in the second round or third round, whichever it was. Very weird circumstances there from Orhobai. I wish he would trust his hands a little bit more. Obviously, wrestling has been his base throughout his career, but he has clearly been improving his hands. And, you know, not just some of the knockouts that he had in the LFA, but also rocking Brenner the numerous times that he did in this spot. Should trust his hands a little bit more. Hopefully Uriah Faber and the guys go out there and show him this fight once again and just be like, hey, look at what you are doing to these men when you are landing that 1-2 combination. You're hitting with sting, you're hitting with power, you're able to overwhelm these guys once you get them hurt that badly, and then from there you should be able to get them out of there. So you know, luckily, he didn't fumble the bag here. He still goes out there. He gets a 29-27. He won all three rounds. Obviously, that 1 point taken away brings the score down to 29-27. He was the lock of the night play as well, around that minus 250 range. I expected it to be even more lopsided. I know he won every single round in this fight, but still, it just felt like it should have been a little bit more dominant, possibly even a finish as well. But good work from Orhobai going out there and getting the win. All right, let's check out the odds that cash here. Orhobai moneyline cashes at minus 260. By decision, plus 140. The over 2.5 cashes at minus 160. Again, very weird circumstance. Also, on the flip side, the Cinderella run of Elvis Brenner comes to an end. He pulled off the upset victory two times as a big underdog against Gurum Kutataladze and Zubera Tuhugov. Unfortunately, he's unable to do that here against Miktabek Orhobai. Orhobai, still good potential. Clearly shows that he still has some, things that he needs to shore up in his game in terms of his confidence, especially in the striking realm. But I look forward to seeing how he looks coming back into his next matchup. Great work from him here, but he could have done better. Regardless, picks up the unanimous decision victory over Elvis Brenner. Absolute masterful performance there from Yasmin Lucindo as she goes out there and sweeps Karolina Kovalkiewicz on the scorecards, 30-27 all across the board. She showed it all. Great striking. She was landing some big shots, hurt her a couple times, landed some good shots when she got the takedown from that top position, threatened with a few submissions. Karolina showcasing that she's still in there in terms of being able to not die and not get completely demolished. But that was a pretty clear victory for Lucindo. Great for her confidence to defeat somebody with the name and experience that Kovalkiewicz brings to the table. But yeah, good performance for her. And I look forward to seeing how they continue to move her up the rankings here. All right, let's check out the odds that cast. Lucindo, chalky favorite, comes through at minus 420. By decision, plus 110. And then the over 2.5. Cashes at minus 205. Not too much to say about this, right? Kovalkiewicz, she likely either, you know, wants to stick around and fight fighters closer to her level, closer to her, you know, level that she's at this stage of her career, rather than just fighting these up and comers that have a good chunk of potential, or she just decides to hang them up. You know what I mean? This was she had a 4-5 winning streak. It looked great, but we see now that she really doesn't have what it takes to get back into the title picture. Lucindo, still very young, 22 years old, if I'm not mistaken. I look forward to seeing how the UFC matches are up moving forward. But tonight, she goes out there and wins a clear unanimous decision victory over Karolina Kovalkiewicz. It's clear that the strength disparity as Jack Shore goes up to featherweight is going to be a little bit of a problem, especially against a guy like Joanderson Brito, and that was on full display in this matchup as Brito does a great job in terms of stifling Jack Shore up against the cage for the majority of this matchup, beating up the lead leg originally, and then that ultimately causes the stoppage in the second round as a nasty cut forms on the shin of Jack Shore, and that's the first time I think I've ever seen a fight stopped due to a cut to a leg or a knee or a shin or anything like that. Very weird circumstance there. But the doctor pretty much said that it wasn't safe for Shore to continue. Hence, Joanderson Brito picks up the second round knockout victory or TKO victory over Jack Shore. Good work from Brito. You know, his only loss in the UFC, I believe, was his UFC debut to Bill Algeo. He's been able to put together a solid winning streak since then. Calling out Dan Ige, not a bad look. Let's check out the odds that cash first before we talk about that. Brito comes through as the favorite. That calls for a sweep on the prelims. Money line for the favorites. Brito minus 180 comes through as the last favorite on the prelims to cash. By knockout plus 260. Round two plus 600. Round two knockout plus 1000. And then the over 1.5 cashes by just about a minute or so by at minus 180. So again, good work from Brito, showcasing his strength, showcasing that he can go out there and compete against guys that are usually relentless grapplers. I'm curious to see how he does against some of the more ranked featherweights that are out there. Again, calling out Dan Ige, I would love to see that matchup as Ige is trying to hold on to a ranking spot, still, you know, exchanging wins and losses over his last several fights. I think that would be a phenomenal matchup and really tell us how far Brito can take this thing, especially against a guy as tested as Dan Ige. Jack Shore, I don't know if he'll be able to cut back down to 135 pounds, but he's going to have to reassess things, maybe put on a little bit more muscle there to try to compete at 145 pounds, especially when his style is heavily reliant on grappling and overwhelming his opponents with the clinch and grappling. You got to be a little bit stronger to be able to pull it off against some of these guys. So Brito versus Ige next, I wouldn't mind that. And once again, Brito gets his hand raised here with a second round finish over Jack Shore, handing him his second professional defeat. What a performance from Caio Bahio as he goes out there and flatlines Paul Craig in the second round of their matchup. And he played that fight perfectly. As I had broken down, and I thought the best way for him to go out there and play this fight was utilize his grappling defensively. You know, a lot of people saw him go out there and normally utilize his wrestling offensively throughout his UFC career and on the come up. But we saw even in that Mahmoud Muradov fight, he doesn't chase takedowns. He doesn't get desperate with the takedowns. Once he realizes that he needs to strike with his opponent, he'll be comfortable in getting into that stance and getting into the rhythm of hurting his opponents on the feet, or at least being competitive with his opponents on the feet. In this matchup specifically, we know you just treat the ground like hot fire or lava, hot lava, against a guy like Paul Craig. That's how he gets his wins, is when he's able to go out there and just snatch up submissions off of his back. And Caio Bahio broke it down perfectly in his post-fight interview, saying, hey, we are the fighting nerds. We do our tests, we take the exams, and we pass it with A+. And that's exactly what happened here. Kept the fight on the feet and eventually found that opportunity to find the big punch to put Paul Craig down. It's hilarious watching Paul Craig fight, because the lead up in all of his fights, this guy brings all of the ferocity, all of the fire, all of the drama into just trying to scare his opponents, and then he goes out there and fights the same way every single time, offers nothing up in the striking realm, falls to his back, hoping that his opponent will follow him there too, so he can get to his jiu-jitsu game. That never happens. I would love to see Paul Craig try to take a Hani Yaya type of approach. And what I mean by that is bite down that on the mouthpiece. You know, try to go for the conventional takedown at first. You know, go for double legs, go for single legs, whatever it is. Push your opponent up against the cage. Do what you have to do methodically first to try to get the takedown. And if it doesn't end up working, fuck it. Bite down on the mouthpiece, throw with all your heat, and the best case scenario is you clip your opponent and either knock them out, or you clip them, drop them, and then eventually get your submission game going that way rather than just flop into your back. Hopefully that's something that he looks to do in his next matchup. Clearly his striking, technically speaking, is not coming together the way that he expected it to. Is what it is, but great work from Caio Bahio here. All right, let's check out the odds that cash. Bahio, big favorite, comes through at minus 600. By knockout, plus 210. Round two, plus 360. Round two knockout, plus 700. And then I believe, the under 1.5 cashes as well at plus 150. Great work from Caio Bahio, pretty much drawing that fight out perfectly, going out there and executing and getting the finish. Very happy about that. Can't wait to see if the favorites continue to win. That's another one. I believe that's 9 now in a row. There's 4 more to go. Let's see how it goes. Michel Pereira makes quick work of another middleweight opponent. This is the third straight opponent that he has finished in less than 66 seconds. This time around, it comes by guillotine choke in 54 seconds over Ettore Potiera. Now, there was a very sketchy moment there where he did his, you know, crazy flip after dropping Potiera, and it seemed like his shin kind of landed on the head of Potiera. But to me, I don't know if it would have made that big of a difference to what the outcome would have happened anyway. It seemed like nowadays, Pereira is more so keen on getting submissions over his opponents just to ensure that he's able to put them away. And that's what he was hammering to do here as Potiera was slowly starting to make his way back to his feet. We knew Pereira was going to wrap up that neck and look to take it on home with him. But he's been looking absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, it's going to get tougher for him to put these guys away so quickly. So it'll be cool to see how he fares against guys deeper in the middleweight division. But you got to give him somebody in the top 15, somebody in the top 10, maybe put him in a fight night co-main event spot, but he's definitely worthy of that and could, you know, really achieve his potential, especially only being 30 years old at this point in time. All right, let's check out the odds that cash here. Another big favorite comes through, minus 560 on Pereira's money line. By submission comes through at plus 380. Round one, plus 130. Round one submission, plus 700. And the under 1.5 cashes at minus 125. Potiera, you know, he was originally scheduled to fight somebody else a couple months from now, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he jumps right back into that and gets into training camp. Probably shouldn't have taken this short notice spot, but it is what it is. Again, great work from Michel Pereira. Continues to go out there and be the human highlight reel. Let's see if he can continue to do that as he takes steps up in competition. But on this night, he takes out Ettore Potiera, sub 1 minute. We finally got an underdog on the board as Anthony Smith goes out there and submits previously undefeated Vitor Petrino 2 minutes into the first round by guillotine, and it showcased a little bit of inexperience from the 12 fight veteran Vitor Petrino going up against a 50 plus fight veteran in Anthony Smith. Seeing Vitor go for the takedown and Anthony Smith just latch onto that choke, and then Petrino willingly just takes him down, goes right into the guard and allows Anthony Smith to torque on that guillotine and get the tap. You know, you got to be weary sometimes with these chalky favorites going up against experienced vets. Again, I was a guy that really thought Petrino had all the chops to make this fight very difficult and really put it on Anthony Smith. But, you know, when you're undefeated, it seems, and Anthony Smith laid it out perfectly in the post fight interview, when you're undefeated, anything you do is pretty much not wrong because you're going out there and winning most of your fights. So big learning lesson there for Vitor Petrino. Anthony Smith somehow gets himself back into the win column, especially against a streaking opponent like Vitor Petrino. Who knows what could be next for Anthony Smith. All right, let's check out the odds that cash. Like I said, the first underdog of the night to cash, Anthony Smith, comes through at plus 380. Check out some of these juicy props. So by submission, plus 1200. Round one, plus 1400. Round one submission, plus 3000. And the under 1.5 cashes at plus 155. If you had a round one submission ticket at plus 3000, drop it in the comment section below. I don't know how many people should have had that, but given that Smith is a experienced veteran and a BJJ black belt, maybe it was something that he was planning this entire time. Absolutely crazy scenes there for Smith to pull that off over the previously undefeated Vitor Petrino. The King of Rio, Jose Aldo, reigns supreme once again in his return bout here, taking out the streaking and rising prospect Jonathan Martinez, sweeping him on the scorecards 30-27 all around. He had Martinez hurt a couple times, specifically in that third round where he clearly had Martinez wobbled, had his equilibrium off, but instead of chasing the finish, he just chose to take the fight to the ground and do some good work from on top. You know, I'm over here like, hey, go finish him. I got a plus 700 on you. But he goes out there and still gets the money line win, which I'm happy about considering he was an underdog going into this matchup. And I really didn't understand the sentiment going into this fight from the public that Aldo was washed. Like, it made no sense to me considering that, you know, he was 3-1 in his last four fights before retiring and going over to boxing where he was still competitive. You know, 2-0-1 last year when he switched from MMA to boxing. And his only loss came at the hands of Merab Dvalishvili, which was his last fight, which was supposed to be his retirement from MMA. But the three prior fights to that were against strikers. And he went out there and outstruck those guys and even out-grappled some of them too. And he showcased the same thing here against Jonathan Martinez. No hate on Martinez. He's a great fighter, clearly very talented, but this is a huge task for him to take on, you know, coming in as a favorite. You know, he was minus 170 earlier this week, which made no sense to me. Obviously, money coming in on Aldo throughout the week to close that line a little bit more, but going into the backyard of Jose Aldo is, you know, just a mental fuck already. You know what I mean? I don't like to take too many things from outside of the cage into consideration, but that is something you have to, especially when you're going up against a guy like Jose Aldo, who is, again, the king of Rio, the guy that pretty much runs the town. And we saw what he was able to do once he stepped inside the cage. And Aldo, phenomenal job in terms of just owning the cage right away. You know, anytime he would throw, he would do a good job in terms of evading the counter strikes that were coming back his way. And he just stayed up on the punch count. And Martinez almost had no answer for anything. And before he knew it, he was behind and just didn't have enough to really get back into it. You know, Martinez did land a good shot at the end of the second round, still not enough to sway the judges back into his favor for that round. And he started the third round off pretty well, but then it seemed like Aldo was really starting to pick up some steam, landing some big shots. Then that's when he hurt Martinez and then chose to take him to the ground and then grind him out from that top position. I felt if he unloaded a little bit more, he probably would have knocked him out. I think he was scared in terms of Martinez landing some sort of Hail Mary counter shot that would put Aldo out, hence why he took the path of, you know, lesser resistance by taking him to the mat and then just controlling him for the last minute and a half of that matchup. Again, some veteran like shit there from Jose Aldo. The guy can still be competitive among some of the best at bantamweight, especially if he's going up against a fellow striker. I don't know how he would fare against somebody like Sean O'Malley, who is a master of distance and would probably be very good in terms of landing that shot straight down the pipe on Aldo. But, you know, give him guys like Jonathan Martinez or Pedro Munhoz or Rob Font, he's going to find ways to win even at 37 years old. So don't think that he's going to come back and vie for a title anytime soon. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe if they position him correctly, match him up correctly, they could probably get him to a title shot, but I don't ultimately think that he will be able to actually wear that bantamweight strap that he has been chasing for a little bit now. All right, let's check out the odds that cashed. Aldo Moneyline closes at plus 120. I was able to get in closer to plus 145 earlier this week. By decision, plus 230. Over 2.5 cashes at minus 260. A little bit of a step back for Jonathan Martinez here, but the kid's still young enough. The kid's still talented enough to learn from this experience, bounce back, and still find himself in the top seven of this division if he's able to go out there and parlay together a couple more victories. But tonight belonged to Jose Aldo as he goes out there and picks up the unanimous decision victory in his return from retirement. I just recorded this segment and now realize that I did not hit record. So we're going to try this a second time and maybe I can be a little bit more efficient because I was quite peeved at Steve Ersig's fight IQ, especially late in this matchup. But Alexandre Pantoja goes out there, defends his title successfully for the second time as he picks up the unanimous decision victory over Steve Ersig. Now let's talk about the fight here. Now, just mind-blowing fight IQ from Steve Ersig late in this matchup. This was a fight that was on the table for him. 2-2 on two judges' scorecards going into the final round. Everything to win here in the final frame. And for some reason, going away from what made him so successful in the prior four rounds, he decides to go against that here and try to grapple against Pantoja, who wants to grapple. That's where he can kind of catch his breath a little bit and just perform his best and just flow as effortlessly as we've seen him do in the past. But for some reason, Steve Ersig decides to go out there and grapple with Alexandre Pantoja. Now, if you guys remember earlier in this show, I was talking about Mick Tybeck Oralby, and when him and his coaches go out there and watch this fight back, they're going to be pissed off that he didn't trust his hands a little bit more, and he probably could have knocked out Elvis Brenner other than having to settle for some sort of, or at least the unanimous decision there. And in this matchup, Steve Ersig and his coaches are going to go back and be like, why the fuck did we grapple in the fifth round? You were doing a great job in terms of stopping the takedown, stopping the pressure, and just beating him up from distance, landing that nasty jab down the pipe and that beautiful elbow to follow up. You've caused so much damage on Pantoja over the course of four rounds with your striking. But no, let's go grapple. I don't understand it. For the life of me, don't understand it, especially with Pantoja, who looks like death when he's trying to strike. Sure, I'm sure he throws with a little bit of heat, but I know the majority of the power is gone. Steve Ersig, clearly longer, better footwork, better striker, especially at that stage of the fight. And for some reason, he goes out there and grapples. absolutely mind blown that fight went the way that it went there. Usyk, very talented, showcased that he is championship level in the UFC. He might only need one or two more wins to get back into the title fight here, but gonna be insane that it came down to just one round. And I believe even when the decision was read, he just looked back to his coach and said, "One round. That's all it was. It was the fifth round." That's all he needed. Maybe he felt a little bit more comfortable going for takedowns and trying to find a submission when his coaches had told him that, you know, he was down and he needed a finish, and he has more submissions on his record than he has knockouts. But you're not submitting a guy like Alexandre Pantoja. So that was a bad call from the jump, if that's what he was hoping to do. Should have just stuck with the striking. You know, he landed some big shots, so maybe he was demoralized by the fact that Pantoja, you know, never got rocked or dropped or anything like that. But that was the way that he was going to win the fight. All right, let's quickly take a look at the actual judges' scorecards here. All three judges giving the first round to Alexandre Pantoja. Two of the three judges giving Steve Usyk round two. Surprising that one judge even scored that round for Pantoja. That's David Torelli. That's where we got the 49-46 scorecard from. But I thought round two, Steve Usyk. Round three, unanimous. Alexandre Pantoja. Round four, unanimous. Steve Usyk. And then it comes down to round five, where all three judges unanimously score that round in Pantoja's favor. Again, absolutely insane. Round three was close, but I could definitely see how you give that to Pantoja. But to give the fight away in the fifth round the way that Usyk did, maybe a lack of experience thing, right? This is his, like, I would not want to be Steve Usyk's next opponent. Let's put it that way. I get it. The guy looks unassuming. His name is fucking Steve at the end of the day. Looks like Michael Scott. I get all that, but you cannot deny this man's level of talent. You can maybe question his fight IQ a little bit, but defensive work, high level. Striking, high level. Just got to put it together a little bit better, and maybe we could see him actually come out on top. Let's check out the odds that cashed here. Then we'll talk about Pantoja and what I'd like to see moving forward. Pantoja cashes as the minus 190 favorite by decision, plus 230, and the over 3.5 cashes at minus 150. Yeah. Getting back to Steve Usyk real quick, what he should do next. I would love to see a five-round either fight night headliner or co-main event for the Perth card with him against Brandon Royval to determine who the next number one contender should be. That would be phenomenal matchmaking, a great fight all around. Is that what that should be? And that should tell us clearly who should be next up, especially with, you know, I get it. Royval got clean swept on the scorecards back in December, picked up a big win over former champion Brandon Moreno in the meantime. And if you were to go out there and beat a guy like Steve Usyk, he could make a case to go out there and fight for the title one more time. But I really think that, you know, that should be what's next. For Pantoja, sit on the sideline for a little bit. He's 34 years old. Maybe he should, there's no clear number one contender, at least off the top of my head, that I can think about. You know, there are a lot of up and coming guys, but I think that, you know, the Steve Usyks and the Amir Albazis, the Manel Cops, those guys are still up at the top there. You know, Alex Perez and Tagiro Lumbekov going to be fighting very shortly. That's another fight that we could think about for Flyweight. So there's a good crop of guys coming up. Nobody clearly deserving of the title shot next, but Steve Usyk has definitely asserted himself and said that, hey, like, you got to take me seriously. And that's definitely what's up there. All right, let's put a bow on this recap show here. Recap stats. There were four knockouts, two submissions, seven decisions. Favorites went 11-2. Obviously, those two underdogs being Anthony Smith and Jose Aldo. And then performer of the night, you could go with Aldo coming back after a retirement and having a clean sweep against Jonathan Martinez. You could go with Michel Pereira doing Michel Pereira things. But I think the guy that most people are going to be talking about moving forward after this, other than Steve Usyk, is going to be Mauricio Ruffi. Phenomenal performance against Jamie Mullarkey, touching him up for about 4 minutes before he's able to finally knock him out. Showcasing the McGregor-like striking that we've seen from the regional scene, and he actually brought it over to the UFC now. And then what he was able to do to Jamie Mullarkey, definitely a performance worthy or a performer of the night, in my opinion. Runner-up, Steve Usyk, even in defeat, showcasing that he can compete at an elite level for sure. All right, next week the UFC is back at it for UFC St. Louis, headlined by a heavyweight fight between Derek the Black Beast Lewis and Rodrigo Nascimento. And I will be back on Monday to break down that card in full for you guys. I'll see you guys then. Peace.